Thank you. Good to see you, everyone. Thank you, Carl, for that introduction. I was laughing about the part about being retired due to teaching shortages due to COVID. I'm teaching four classes this semester, so.
Oh, boy. I didn't know that.
Full-time faculty member teaches three, and I am indeed retired, but I'm teaching four. So anyway, but it's good to be here with everyone, and hopefully you've all had a reasonable weekend. And I was thinking about what I wanted to talk about, and I was looking through some historical documents and came upon the first three sermons that the Buddha gave. And of course, the first one was the talk he gave to his five former ascetic partners, the people that he had spent 6 years sitting with no food and no whatever. And that was the sermon on the Four Noble Truths, the very basic core of all of Buddhism. And then the second sermon was a sermon that he gave on essentially the discussion of non-self, form, feeling, perceptions, and mental formations and consciousness are not self. And that's a long and important teaching. Then I got to the third teaching that the Buddha gave. This was a teaching he gave shortly after his own awakening, and he gave it in Gaya in India. And the first line of it caught my attention for reasons that are about to become very clear. The Buddha said, "Our world is on fire. Everything is ablaze." And so I was immediately struck by the fact that you know, I didn't know the Buddha was living in California in 2020. of course, we do know that. But, you know, for those of us in California, this surely is an apt opening to a teaching. Our world is on fire. Everything is ablaze. And, you know, for the rest of the planet, last year, the rainforests were burning in the Amazon. And many, many people ignored the fact because Brazil was a long ways away. So it seemed like, well, there's fires, but they're over there. It doesn't have anything to do with us, or we didn't see the immediate connection. But a basic teaching is that fire anywhere of the types that we experienced in the rainforests last year and continuing this year, and the fires in the western part of the United States, fires anywhere affect everyone. And that's just a basic fact of humanity. But when the Buddha said that all was burning, that everything is ablaze, he was actually talking to these new students. Just unmuted, I think we're getting some feedback. But the Buddha was talking to his students, and he wasn't actually talking about those kind of fires. He was talking about the internal fires that we each carry with us. And the teaching goes that the teachings of the Buddha were designed to be like medicine. We go to a physician or a doctor generally to fix something or to end a pain, to seek some relief. And often when we do that, we get some medicine. And so when the Buddha gave these talks, these three and then the many others that are in the Pali Canon, the idea was that these would be medicine for our heart-mind, something to help us to be more compassionate, to increase our sense of ease, and to build better connections between us and others. So in reading this sermon, and it is the Adipaya Sutra, commonly known because no one can pronounce that word, including me, as the Fire Sermon. And that's the name that it goes by, and it can be looked up. But this is medicine that's needed by all of us. And in California right now, and for those of us, everybody in the world living through 2020, there's a lot of medicine that's needed for us to live with peace and ease with all the things that are going on. All of the things that we have actually lost, that we've actually experienced the destruction of, that we have been afraid, even if we haven't experienced it, that we have been rightly anxious about, that we've been sometimes angry about the way things have been ineffectively dealt with. And so we have all of those emotions in addition to the actual physical losses that the year 2020 has brought to us in terms of connection. I mentioned last week that I had gotten a haircut and realized as the person began cutting my hair that it was the first person that had touched my body in 7 months. Those kind of losses. So we all have those losses, and those losses generate actual feelings and emotions and thoughts, and then mental formations, as the second sermon of the Buddha talked about. So the Buddha, when he's using the idea that everything is ablaze, is using that as a teaching mechanism or almost a metaphor. So the fire sermon, I think, has meaning certainly for 2,600 years, but certainly beyond the fire season of 2020, although it's particularly important this year, it seems to me. So just to start out with, we've all been burned at some point, am I right? By people, by relationships, by jobs, by our own failures to work skillfully and diligently on things that we had planned to do, and then they didn't get done, or they didn't get done the way we wanted them to. And so we felt like we'd been burned. And most of us have also been on the other end of that, where we burned others. You know, they failed to listen to us, or they were too slow or too fast or too noisy. They were withholding, and so we really let them have it. We had to burn just a bit. And the idea was, frankly, that we would get things the way we wanted them to be or needed them to be. And I can tell by some of the smiles I'm seeing right now that those of us who have been the burners often wanted things to be the way we wanted them to be. And that's not exactly how burning someone else turned out. That fire, like the fire that the Buddha talks about, is all things are ablaze. If we go out into the world with anger, that's usually where we get back. So as I mentioned, the teachings of the Buddha were designed to be like a medicine. And in this particular case, he says throughout, a medicine to cool the flames. So I'll read you just a little, a few lines of the sutra. It's not a very long one, but he says to them, he's speaking to the monks, all is a flame. What is all? The eye is all. The eye is a flame. The ear is a flame. The nose is a flame. The tongue is a flame. And the body is a flame. The intellect is a flame. Ideas are a flame. Intellectual consciousness and intellectual contact are a flame. Whatever there is that arises in dependence of our mind experiences pleasure, pain, or neither pleasure or pain, all of that too is a flame. And so he goes on, and it goes on as many of the ancient teachings do, to repeat that same thing several times. And so I won't read it all to you at this point, but he basically is saying that those things, as we talked about in the previous, in the second sermon of the Buddha, those things that we think make up who we are all a flame. They all have the possibility to be things that we hang on to tightly and that we really cling to. And they are things that in time we learn that we can let go of, because in fact, everything changes. Everything changes, and we do not have any way of stopping ourselves or our emotions or our thoughts or our world from changing. So how do we put out the flames? The Buddha is asked. And what he says is that the flames will burn out. Through dispassion, the person is released. With release, there is knowledge. Release, he says. He discerns that birth has ended and that the holy life has been fulfilled, that the task is done. So here the Buddha is referring to the cycle of birth and death, and saying that if we let go of our thoughts and our fears and our anguish, that we have this wonderful opportunity to live with things exactly as they are, to dwell happily with things as they are, as one of the teachings of the Buddha says. So the end of the teaching carries the message that considering this, a disciple of the Dharma will see the Four Noble Truths and walk in the Eightfold Path of Holiness. They will become mindful or watchful of their eye, watchful of their senses, watchful of their thoughts. And so they have this opportunity that by bringing mindfulness, by using our practice to notice what's going on with us in relation to the world. There are events happening in the world, and then there are our reactions to them and the way we hang on to them. I listened over this weekend to a wonderful talk at the Insight Meditation Center by a person named Jesse Vega Frey, who was talking about the fire sermon. And he's looking at the question, he addresses the question of what is the flame. And as I said, it's our feelings, our ideas, our mental cognitions, which he calls fabrications, which I liked, our sorrows, our lamentations. And what he says is that the Buddha says that we must work to cool the flames, to cool those flames that burn within us, the flames of our ideas and the flames of our habit behaviors and the flames of our fears and lamentations and sorrows. All of those things are real, but we need to work on relieving them, to cooling those flames. And the reason we do that is not just for us and not most importantly for us, but it's for others and for everyone and for the planet. But it is for us as well. So that's one of the things that gets confused oftentimes in Buddhist teachings and in social justice work, for that matter, is the idea that we go out and do it for everybody else. And the Buddha is very clear that wise compassion is compassion for ourselves, compassion for others, and compassion for ourselves and others, that those are all one thing. So the teaching says that the way we relate to fires can keep them burning. We can add more fuel, or we can react wholeheartedly and skillfully. And that's where our practice comes in. If we practice Zazen, if we practice meditation, we have the opportunity to actually look at what's really happening in the current moment and how we are in that moment, who we are and how we are. the Buddha in this teaching says that fire requires flammable material to continue. Our practice can help us not to be the flammable material. We can show up, we can have our experience, we can be ourselves, we can connect to each other. We do not have to do that in a way that increases the likelihood of things burning. It says one of the ancestors says, in fact, that fires arises from the work of fools, and fire is never provoked by the wise. And of course, they were not horrible, judgmental people speaking about fools. It's what they meant by the naive, those who have not practiced, those who have not had an introduction to the way of the Buddha. So they don't mean to call names, I'm sure. But the wise, again, is not a judgment. By the wise, what the Buddha was saying is those who have experienced the way, those who have learned to practice. So our ability and capacity to motivation for cooling the flames that burn all around us is the result of our practice. If we practice the gifts that have been given to us, the gifts of kindness and compassion, metta practice, mindfulness practice, we will have the opportunity not to be flammable materials ourselves and not to spread the fires of discontent and frustration and anger and fear in our path where we go. As thinking of the news I watched last night, and some of you may have seen it, that in Sonoma County, and further north, some wealthy landowners had got a great idea, and against the law and against safety standards, they decided to set backfires on their property so that they would protect their own homes. Don't have to go into a long story. You can imagine how that worked out in terms of how that fire is burning over 1 million acres at this point. They weren't considering anybody else. They were considering their own property. They weren't even thinking of their own neighbors, because in several of the cases, they set the what they call backfires to burn away the brush at the property line for the neighbors next door. And when the wind shifted, the results were disastrous. So this is the kind of thing that as a metaphor is perfect for this teaching of the Buddha, that when we think about responding to actual danger, to actual fears, to actual frustrations, we need to do so thinking about ourselves and each other, and ourselves and each other and others. Because when we practice wholeheartedly, the teaching says we reduce the flames. And if at first we don't reduce the flames, we increase our capacity, as we're taught by the Buddha, to live with fire. And, you know, fire, as we keep hearing over and over again, as we have, every newscaster has run out of things to say about the current fires. And so we've heard the history of fire. And we know that throughout time, forests naturally dry out and forests naturally have fires. And it's part of the evolutionary process. And the problem that we have now, of course, is with global warming and the fact that we've built lots of structures and different things in places where we probably should not have built them. And so we're having fires at a whole different level. But the fact of the matter is that fire is a natural thing and a natural part of the order of things. And so so we shouldn't dislike fire completely. So if we don't reduce the flames of the fire in the beginning, we have an opportunity to remember how to live with fire as part of the natural order of things. And we're reminded that there will always be fires in our life. And that this teaching reminds us that we should be really aware of the magnitude of the challenges we face. Most people come to spiritual practice, I know I did, looking for some ease and some peace, looking for some solution to things that were causing me distress, which for me was a serious connection to addiction and alcoholism and a serious developed sense of isolation. So I came, to spiritual practice with the idea that I would find solutions to all of that. Well, and you know, I expected the first time I sat on a Zafu, which was a lot of years ago, almost 30 years ago now, when I still could sit on a Zafu with these old wounded knees that don't do that anymore. But when I first sat on the Zafu, I was expecting peace and tranquility and equanimity. And of course, that's not what happened. What happened was I had the opportunity to bring mindful awareness to how my life had gotten to that, to the point that it was at, and how I had come to relate to myself and to others the way that I currently was at that point, and how I had come to have been a person at one time with a huge number of friends and associates, and how that wasn't the case by the time I found my way to Buddhist practice. And so where I came looking for ease and peace, what I got instead was the flames of awareness, the burning inside of what is it that has happened, and how have I been a part of that? How have I created this by not being careful, by not being compassionate with myself or others, by being afraid? And so those were the issues that came up. So what we find is when we start this practice often is a relentless grasping at what used to be. You know, that was for me when I started doing practice, it was, well, I used to be happy and I used to be fabulous and I used to be. That's really all I want is that. And during the course of 2020, we've heard a lot of people talk about when will we get back to the old way? When will we go back to normal? And I think that's part of what this teaching is telling us about, is that relentless grasping for what used to be, which probably wasn't normal in any positive sense of the word normal. And how do we get back to the situations that got us to 2020 is basically that question. And how do we go back to behaviors that have, for many of us, were just habitual behaviors that we did to survive, some bare means of survival. And so each time as we practice, which is the message, that we put the fires out through practice, each time we practice, we have an opportunity to think of our words, thoughts, and actions coming from a place of compassion for self, for others, and for self and others. Knowing that the embers of the fire continue to burn, but knowing that if we practice, we become stronger. And we reach the point where we can dwell happily in things as they are, because connected to one another, we can find ways to put out the fires. And when we don't put out the fires, to live with the fires. You know, we can stop saying, I wish it was like this. I wish other people would do just this. If only my world was like this. And we get a chance to say, perhaps I'll stop wrestling with reality. Fighting with reality is almost never a fight that one of us wins. Reality is reality. So when we continue to do that, we engage ourselves in what the teaching calls the deliberate manufacture of misery. And so our Buddhist practice teaches us that, you know, we don't come to Buddhist practice expecting to be liberated automatically and quickly. Or we might expect that when we first come, but we learn quickly that the practice requires us to do more. And that we don't come to liberation or awakening. We don't reach nirvana, for those who are not bodhisattvas and are going to reach nirvana. And those of us who are bodhisattvas, which is a practitioner in Mahayana Buddhism, we are going to reach nirvana, but only when we can do it all together. But we don't do that by avoiding cravings, delusions, frustrations, resentments, and anger, or by applying simple patches. And we don't do that by pretending they're not there and putting on a good face and saying, as we've heard many times in 2020 from various people, that everything is just fine. Things have never been better. They couldn't be better. How we reach our awakening or our liberation is that we do that arousing the good qualities, kindness, compassion, service to others, engagement in engaged Buddhist practice or engaged social justice practice. We arouse wholesomeness in ourselves and in those who we love and care about, and then through metta practice, through others and further out circles. And we do this by reducing our unwholesome and unskillful thoughts, words, actions, and emotions, being afraid, worrying in anticipation of what might happen, being frustrated when things don't happen exactly the way we want. And so what we learn basically is that the flames are burning around us and everything is ablaze. And then we have the opportunity through our practice to come through suffering to the other side. And as the old saying says, the only way out of suffering is through suffering. So the question that the Buddha asks us in the sermon is, are we really ready for happiness and liberation? Are we ready to cool the flames that are burning around us? In many cases, flames that warmed our lives before we got to this place, flames that we were used to dealing with and dancing around. So we accept fire, we work with fire, we understand that we must deal with our grief and our loss, and that we have this opportunity to say, huh, there's something different I can do. I can say I'm afraid, I can say I'm frustrated, I can ask folks for help. And then through my practice, I can say, what's real? What's real right now, and what's a mental formation? And I think those are the opportunities that we have. And I was reading a book by Stephen Levine that's called Unattended Sorrow. And he says, we are reincarnated from day to day. We receive a fresh start with each awakening. Ironically, we may find that as the heart revives, we have seldom lived in a truly genuine manner in tune with the small song within us, but rather we live shrunken to the size of our fears. The unfolding of a new life may take us through unexplored territory. We become increasingly open to what lies beyond our old imaginings of who we thought we were. So the Buddha's teaching here is that we, everything is ablaze, and that's okay, because we have the capacity to deal with that. And the capacity is in us and in each other. And in these times, particularly what we're all living through in 2020, we have this terrific opportunity to say, we're bigger than our fears. And we are more united than people might want us to be and might be trying to divide us into tribes, and we're not going to have it. And that our practice allows us to lead a different kind of life and to bring all of us together along that path. So thank you, everyone.
Stephen, thank you. Thank you so much for that talk. It's so relevant right this moment, like you say, even though those teachings were given 2,600 years ago. It's hard to comprehend that, but it's true. Well, let's sit together for a minute or two